It's been said that luck is the intersection of preparation and opportunity. Welcome to the Australian Hunting Backcountry podcast, where we will focus on all things hunting in the backcountry, not just in Australia, but everywhere that backcountry hunting is possible. My name is Tobias, and if you're a hunter with no backpacking experience, or even an expert, I would like you to join me as we explore gear, places, and technologies, hear lived experiences, different perspectives, and share the passion that people have for a hard-earned backpack hunt. I appreciate you being here with me as I try to increase the knowledge that will bring us better luck in the backcountry. Well, we are here in the Alpine High Country, Victoria, recording this podcast. And you can hear the pitter-patter of rain in the background. We're currently sheltering under a tarp because we got clagged out today. Fog rolled in pretty early and wouldn't let go. So we ended up retreating back to camp and decided we'd record this podcast. So my colleague, my brother in arms on this trip is Jason. Jason, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hey, thanks, Tobias. Jason, also, I suppose, commonly known as Liquid Antler. For those, I'm based in Brizzy and met Tobias probably about a year ago, and we finally managed to get around and make a trip happen and get down here and at the moment chasing sambar stags around the Alpine National Park, which is pretty cool. Unfortunately, like our device was saying, the old weather's not playing the game at the moment, and the rain's coming down. But yeah, still been a good trip so far.
It has been a good trip. It's certainly gotten us back into the swing of it. It's been, I think I worked out the other day, it's been about 5 years since I've done a trip to the Vic Highfield. So a lot of stuff I had to relearn, reteach myself, and after the first day, I've had to relearn those lessons the hard way with an embarrassingly heavy pack weight.
Yeah, but saying that, kudos to you, Tobias, that here we are in the middle of the Alpine National Park and you've carried all your podcast gear on top of all your hunting gear. So, I can see now why your pack was so heavy.
It's a pretty embarrassing figure, so we won't divulge it, but yeah. So, I guess the... If we go right back, the idea, the concept of this podcast sort of started, there was three of us, it was you, myself, and Blake from the Venture Folk, and we went to an event in Toowoomba with the Australian Huntsman. He organised a hunter's dinner, and we all went together, and then as a result of that, we kind of conceived this idea about the podcast, You were obviously busy with your YouTube channel, and Blake's got the Venture Folk thing going on too, so I kind of took the reins and ran with it. But more recently, this weekend started for us at Warragul in the Deer Expo, which was an awesome event, so kudos to the organisers of that and everybody that was there. Jason ended up flying down, I drove down, and we met up into the expo on the Saturday and did as much as we could, and I was able to meet quite a few people, introduce myself, introduce the podcast to them, try and organise a few guests, and try and also learn as much as we could from some of the presenters there. Probably two of the or three of the standout presenters I think that we saw, and mainly because we were it was obviously very relevant to what we were about to do, was Paul Bogue and Rob Fickling and Zeb. They were pretty entertaining as well as educational as well. So big thanks to those guys and a few of the other guys that were there. Ross O'Meara with the game book did a cooking demonstration. That looked great, and I'm looking forward to catching up with Ross again later on. I can't remember his name now, but it was doing the game preserving, the game meat preserving, the salamis and that sort of thing. So great time. Saw a few familiar faces from Instagram, so got to shake some hands. Anyone in particular stood out for you, Jason?
Well, it was just great to see the hunting community come together in such a well-organised event. It was great, all the people and all the companies that were involved in it. Big one for me was finally meeting up with the Dog and Gun Coffee crew. I've done been involved with them for a little bit here and there, and it was actually great to actually meet them and say hi and introduce myself. But yeah, the big one was for me was just more that, the hunting community coming together, and just a well-run event. So yeah, well done.
Yeah, was. I know it suffered under the dirty C word for a couple of years, so it was great that they were finally able to get it together and put the show on that they did. So from there on Sunday, Jason and I stayed overnight in Warragul, got up and then drove into the Victorian High Country. Stopped at Lacola was the last sort of stop, fueled up, had a sausage roll, bit of fuel for the hike in, and then we hit the trail.
And I suppose for those that are listening, we've actually come all the way down from Queensland, so it's a fair old trip to plan and sort out. So it was back at that Toowoomba trip, we kind of laid the foundations for what we were wanting to do, but a fair bit of logistics has gone into in the background to, get all our gear down here to Victoria. And yeah, it was great to actually finally get it to that the start of the trail there, and the packs were loaded and it was go time. So yeah, a lot of work in the background to make it happen. And yeah, cheers for Tobias for driving all the way down from Brizzy.
Yeah, and I suppose we'll give a quick shout out to Blake too. He was supposed to come on the trip, but due to work and family commitments, he couldn't make it in the end, so he had to pull out, and that's life. Obviously, family takes priority, and anyway, Blake, we're certainly thinking of you while we're sitting here in the rain and the cold. And no, it's been good. Yeah, I think the trip in the highlight on the walk in for me was that first hut that we came to.
Yeah.
And I'm going to mispronounce it. I'm fairly certain of that. But is it Vahello Gartner?
Yeah, I personally don't know the correct pronunciation either, but I think that's a pretty good crack.
Yeah. Really impressive. The logistics of building something like that out here are just mind-blowing. So obviously some very committed people did some work in this area.
And how did you find that first hike in there once we got going and started to throw down a few Ks?
Yeah, the first hour was okay. I was certainly questioning some of the choices I'd made with gear on the second and third hour, but it was all right. We got in here. Fortunately, we had the tractor walk in on for pretty much all the way, except for just the short stint down to the campsite. But that certainly made things a lot easier. If we hadn't had that, then I don't know how I would have gone. Might have dumped a bit of gear out and left it back there to pick up on the way back.
And you were running the new pack for this trip?
Yeah, so a little while ago I bought a Stone Glacier. I got the guide, which I think is 7,400, something like that. It's a pretty big pack. It's the biggest one they do.
Yeah.
The purpose of getting such a big pack, though, or the thought process behind it, was that I was going to be carrying in the podcast gear. So I've got this waterproof hard shell case that everything came in with. So there's a couple of kilos there, plus the bulk of carrying the case. So that was the reasoning behind the big pack, and I was keen to try Stone Glacier. I'd been running a couple of Kuyu packs in the previous years, and nothing wrong with them. I like them. I just wanted to reach out and try something different. So that was the choice there. And you're running your Tatonka Bison, yeah. 75 plus 10?
Yes, the Tatonka Bison, which I've probably been running now for about the last year or so. So I did do a trip recently back to New Zealand. I got down to South Island, and that was probably my first time really testing the pack out. Did about 8 days down in South Island in New Zealand chasing red deer around. So we got to chop it into a spot in public land and spent the next kind of 8 days walking around and found the Tatonka good size, good overall pack. So yeah, I've just been running that again, getting on this trip. So
yeah, good stuff. It's they're certainly a good looking pack. They look well made. They're robust. They've got plenty of padding on the on the harness and so forth. Yep. So yeah,
no, it's been going well, and it's been going well for this trip as well. So I've been using it as my, I use it for packing, but I'm also using, you know, for our daily hunting as well, just to as we walk around and look for these sandbar.
Actually, that's probably one thing I'll say about the Stone Glacier as well. They've designed it quite well so that you can run it for your expedition size, and then when you need to compress it down, they've actually got other parts sewn into it, so they go into what they call the bivy mode, and it becomes a really nice, compact, neat, you know, day pack essentially. So I've really, really been enjoying that with the Stone Glacier. I'm quite impressed with that feature on it.
No, definitely. I saw you running that, and it's super handy. It really compresses down and looks good.
Mm. Just coming back to the show as well, one thing I'll say that I think we were both impressed with was the new packs from Moroka 30.
Mm.
Rob Fickling gave a good demonstration of it, and the process he went through to design and develop it, and the heartaches obviously that he experienced along the way. And I stopped by the stand and had a quick look, and unfortunately Rob was quite busy, so I didn't get a chance to talk to him too much about it. But that's definitely an interesting pack, and probably something I'm going to look into a little bit more, just to see if it's potentially an option in the future. Obviously it's another financial outlay, and I've got to balance the cost of the pack that I've already bought against the cost of a new one, but I'll see what I can do in the future.
But it definitely did look interesting. They're going with that modular system, and kind of the carbon fibre plate inside it. You know, it looked like actually very interesting. So interesting to see how they go.
Mm. Yeah. And he was pressing the aluminium stays to mould them, the people's backs at the show
that
too. So yeah, definitely you know, an option for someone if you're looking for a new pack. It's I guess the closest thing you can get to being custom designed for you. So it should be interesting. Hopefully we'll get to catch up with Rob. I did talk to him about the podcast, and he seemed keen, so hopefully we'll get to chat to him again in the future.
Yeah, nice.
So now I know you said you've just come back from about a month in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And obviously you did a lot of filming. You're going to release some YouTube vids.
Yeah, I'm putting some videos together at the moment. It's kind of the nature of these trips, the amount of footage you generate. It's quite a slow, you know, audio process of going through and getting it edited. So I am in the process at the moment. There'll be one from my South Island trip chasing red deer. And then I also spent some time in the North Island with the with Dad, which was amazing to get back in the bush with him after so long. So yeah, we chased seeker deer around the Kaimanawas in the central North Island there for, I think it was six days all up. So yeah, I've got another trip in the pipeline for that as well, with some pretty cool footage.
And how long before those videos are coming out, do you think?
The South Island one should drop, what are we now, mid-May? By the end of May, I should have the first one out, and then followed that by the Seeker. And then I'm also going to be doing a video of the trip we're on at the moment, at the moment in the Alpine High Country.
Yeah, all right. Well, in terms of timing, there's a chance that this podcast may come out before your video does. If you're listening to the podcast and the video hasn't come out, go and make sure you get onto the Liquid Antler YouTube channel to be notified when the video does hit. So without giving away any spoilers about your trip, the red trip, how did you go?
Yeah, good. Plenty of deer. So we were on public land, and the kind of goal was, you know, a decent red stag. We would have seen on the trip probably over 80 deer. Unfortunately, the big stags, as they often are, were playing hard to get, but we did manage to get a 10-point red stag for the trip. But like I say, there were plenty of deer around, but we were really trying to target those older animals.
Mm. Being on public land, did you have much competition with other hunters at the time, or was this a ballot
No, so it was just, it wasn't a balloted area. We did come across one other group of hunters, but for this trip we had choppered in or helicoptered into a spot, so spent quite a bit of time recceing the area and tried to get a little bit off the beaten track, especially with you know, getting helicoptered in. It does open up a few more options without the hard grunting and the walk-in. So we were lucky, we only came across the two hunters for the time we're in there, which is pretty amazing, especially for over the raw, busy time of the year. But yeah, we're lucky in that aspect.
I guess that's one of the differences, the big differences between New Zealand and Australia is first of all, the hunting is more culturally acceptable over there, and they're very pro public land and encouraging people to and supporting hunters out into the public land areas. They help a part of the management, I guess, of the animals as well, but it is a source of income for the government too, so it's good to see things like that still going on. And I know we've had some initial conversations already about potentially doing a tar trip in the near future, so definitely looking forward to that and seeing what we can work out. I was supposed to go a few years ago, but of course the nasty C word shut down the country and couldn't go in or out, and I did have a trip planned, but thankfully I hadn't forked out any money or anything, so I didn't lose any money. Yeah, had to put it on hold for a few years. So,
but no, I think we can definitely make that happen. And yeah, in New Zealand, like you're saying, there is a lot of options for your public land. There's a huge amount of land right throughout the country that is readily accessible to any kind of hunter. But if you're keen to, you know, throw the backpack on and load up the gear and you know, throw down some K's, there's pretty spectacular country, and you know, the chance of some cracker stags or you know, large bull tar or chamois or whatever your kind of quarry is. So yeah, the options over there are endless. It's pretty much just getting those maps out and start planning what area you want to target and then just going for it. So yeah, it's a hunting paradise.
There's my understanding is that some areas you can get in with a chopper, and then there's some areas that are only accessible by chopper during a ballot, and other times of the year it's not an option for you.
Yeah, so depending on if this is talking about the tar ballot specifically, or
so is it just tar that go on the ballot? Is there a red deer ballot?
No, there are red deer ballots. There's whoppity ballots. There are a number of type of ballots through the country. It's just depending on what area, depending on what you kind of have to look at each kind of ballot specifically, depending on what the, you know, the rules or regulations are. But saying that, the majority of the area are open the rest of the year. But for instance, the Fiordland Wapiti, that's one instance where you can't actually chopper in for the rest of the year.
Yep. Okay. All right. Well, yep. Definitely got some planning to do and some logistics to work out. So hopefully future episodes we'll be able to share the process that we've gone through and then follow up with another podcast on the trip and after the trip. And so for now, you're from New Zealand originally.
Yes.
And you've only been in Australia for 8 years?
Oh, about 10 years now.
Yeah, about 10 years. Yeah. So prior to coming over to Australia, were you doing a fair bit of hunting in New Zealand?
Yeah. So I was brought up with a little bit of hunting starting out young, you know, with Dad, a bit of goat hunting here and there. But then it was when I got to university, met a couple of mates. They were mad keen deer hunters, tagged along with them, and we went on a couple of trips, and then from there it was just hooked. So right through university, and then we were hunting hard, you know, should be studying, but we're out hunting. But then once I'd graduated university, that's when I actually moved overseas. So yeah, it was probably more those university days that I really got stuck into hunting back in New Zealand.
Yeah.
But I was saying that I still try and get back at least once a year. But it's just been a little bit up and down over the last few years. But yeah, try at least one trip a year back to New Zealand.
And was that South Island, North Island, or both?
So predominantly North Island during university. in saying that, I did return about a year after working overseas, and a mate and I did spend 6 months hunting the length of New Zealand. Wow. So what we did, we started down Stewart Island chasing whitetail, moved away up the South Island, wapiti, red deer, chamois, tar, and then across into the North Island. So the goal of the 6 months was to target all seven species of deer in New Zealand, plus tar, chamois and goats. We didn't get a representative animal from every species, but we did manage to chase every species around the hills. So yeah. 6 months hunting the country of New Zealand was just epic. So
yeah. That would have been amazing. Yeah.
It was. It was one of those things where humming and harrowing and, could we make it happen? And we kind of just bit the bullet and went for it. And it was an incredible trip.
Mm.
And then it was back to reality, and now been based over in Australia. And do a bit of hunting over here in Australia, and whenever I can, get back to New Zealand.
Yep. Yeah. How many trips a year do you generally do to back to New Zealand?
One or two. Okay. Yeah, just dependent.
Yep. And you're also married?
Fiancé.
Fiancé, yeah. Okay. Yep. So you bit into that apple.
Yes.
And how long have you been together with her?
So Nadine, we've been together probably 10 years now, so I've always hunted since I've been with her, so she kind of accepts it. But saying that, I am skating on thin ice a little bit at the moment. I did spend a month back in New Zealand. I was back at work for 11 days, and then I've come straight into the Victorian High Country. So I think I've used up all my brownie points for a little while, so I'll have to keep saving those up.
Well, I guess that was the next question I was going to ask you was how does she feel about the hunting, and is she interested in hunting at all?
She's not personally interested, but she understands my love and kind of passion for it, and has always been super supportive. Like I say, there's not many partners that would allow you to go hunting back in New Zealand for a month and then straight into the Victorian High Country for another 10 days. So, yeah, it's a very, very supportive partner.
And is she happy to eat the game meat as well that you bring home?
Oh, it depends. Depends how I prepare it. I wouldn't say she's huge on the venison, but if it's done to her liking, then I can every now and then.
Yeah. Any secret venison recipes that you...
My go-to is my venison jerky. Okay. So all the offcuts, anything that I don't use up on steaks, roasts, bits and pieces, I always make jerky. I smoke it over cherry wood for about 5 hours, just on a really low cold smoke, and then finish it off in the oven with before I actually smoke it, I do a marinade for about 24 hours, and beautiful. It is incredible, so tasty, and I just vacuum seal it, throw it in the freezer, and then I've just got jerky whenever I need it, especially for a trip like this. Bring some jerky on the trip and it's perfect. So
Nice. I don't believe I've had the pleasure of trying any yet. So
I'll have to bring some along for my next trip.
I have messed around a little bit with trying to do some jerky, but haven't quite mastered it yet. So
I find that smoke over the cherry wood just gives it a little bit really nice smoky taste, and then just finishing off in the oven, it works really well. Not too dry, good flavour, and it really tasty.
Well, I think my signature venison dish is backstrap wrapped in prosciutto.
Oh, yeah.
And then fried off, and then left in the oven, a nice warm oven, for a little while, just to heat it all the way through, and comes out, it's still just rare in the middle, just perfect. And it's always been a hit with anyone I've served that up to, even people who are a little bit dubious about eating venison. They've always been keen on that. So this trip, I guess, has highlighted for us, well, for me personally, how out of practice and out of tune with some backcountry hunting that I am. I've brought along a few bits of gear that probably didn't even really need to, and I probably left behind, left at home a couple of bits of gear that I probably wish I had have brought, especially today, sitting here in wet socks, cold feet. Wish I had brought a fair pair of socks, but lesson learnt. So the Now, I know you do a bit of a gear thing on your YouTube channel, so I won't steal your thunder from there. But I guess if we could talk about the three items that you really appreciate having on the trip, and just talk a little bit about them.
Well, I suppose for me, for the backpack hunting trip, especially somewhere like this down in Victoria, the weather is against us as we sit under the tarp at the moment in a very cold climate. It's just the importance of your shelter, your sleeping setup. For me, it is crucial to have somewhere reliable that at the end of a hunt or the end of the day, when you're cold, wet, miserable after a big day on the hill, that you can retreat to. You know you're going to be dry, you know you're going to be able to get warm, and you can wait out bad weather if you need to. So for this trip, I'm just running a MacPack Nautilus tent. I always personally run a tent setup. I've tried other options over the years, such as bivy bags, flies, but for me, I'm happy to carry the little bit extra weight, I suppose, and a little bit more bulk, just to have for that secure location to tuck away at the end of the day. So the MacPack for me has been a great little tent. It's not super lightweight or anything like that, but it's pretty robust and nice and waterproof. So that's what I'll be running on this trip. But then in addition to just not just the tent, is also having a good sleeping bag. It's amazing when you get back how cold you can be, and been having a good sleeping bag and crawl into and warm up makes a huge difference. I'm still running a sleeping bag I think I bought about 15 years ago. It's a MacPack Sanctuary 700 XP. It's a fully down sleeping bag. It was pricey at the time, but like I say, I've had it for over 15 years and it's still amazing. I can crawl into that and warm myself up. So the tent, the sleeping bag, and then finally just a good sleeping mat. Up till just the South Island trip, I've just been running an old Therm-a-Rest style sleeping mat, but I've just recently upgraded, I suppose, to an Alton Goods. I think it's got an insulation value of R. I think it's their higher end one. And what a game changer to have a decent mattress to sleep in has been huge for me for these last couple of trips. Just having a really good night's sleep in a warm tent, a warm sleeping bag is amazing for me.
Yeah, we were on the drive up, we talked about Alton, because I've actually got a titanium grill that they do, and bought that years ago and actually used it on one trip where we got a bit of meat and cooked some butterflied tenderloin steaks on it, so came into its own there. Very impressed with it, and very little weight penalty being titanium. So and they're based out of Brisbane.
They are a Brisbane company.
You said you went and visited the showroom.
I popped in and said hi. So I can't remember the actual owner's name, but yeah, not really nice guy. Lives and breathes the outdoors and making top quality camping gear, hiking gear. So yeah, definitely recommend checking them out if you haven't already.
That's Alton, Alton Goods. Definitely worth a look. Website's full of great gear for the backcountry, so potentially like to reach out and have a chat to those boys too for the podcast.
Definitely be good.
From what you're saying, they're very, very dedicated, and you said they're very focused on the specs of the material they're using and how they're building things.
Definitely. They want to, talking to them, they're very committed about producing high quality gear. They're really trying to compete against the top companies in the producing different outdoor gear. So very spec focused, which is cool. That's what you want. But then also at a reasonable price. If you check out their prices and what you get, it's good bang for your buck. It was just about snowing, I reckon, above. Look at that, they're coming off the fly. We've got a bit of snow off the fly, so it's getting cold.
Yep. Temperature has dropped quite significantly recent. Just doing this. So. I think for my top three, I'm going to say my sleeping bag and bed mattress are going to be the top one. I got the Therm-a-Rest NeoAir X-Therm, which is one of the highest rated R-value sleeping mats out there. It's really light, it compacts down really small, it's easy to blow up, comes with a pump sack, so you're not breathing into it, so that helps to improve the longevity of it, so you're not breathing moist air into it. And the Thermarest, I think it's Q-Star, the sleeping bag, it's -6, I think. Don't quote me on those figures, but what I really like about it is it's got some straps on the back that fold underneath the your sleeping mat and lock the sleeping bag onto, onto the mat. I'm a back sleeper, but quite often when I'm sleeping on the ground like we are, I find I tend to slide off the mat or you know, end up on the hard ground instead, and of course that's where the cold gets you. So having that sleeping bag locked on the mattress has really made a big difference to my sleep quality. So there's not a lot of sleeping bags out there from the research I did that actually do that. There are a few, but I was able to get hold of the Thermarest one, so I ran that.
What I've actually been finding with the Alton Goods one is they also come, well, I purchased the fitted sheet, and it kind of works on a similar method. Instead of, you know, the original material, it is quite slippery, especially against your sleeping bag. So with the fitted sheet, it's got a spot to throw their inflatable pillow, which I'm also running. But just the texture of the fitted sheet against the sleeping bag really kind of locks you in place, which has been, has been good.
So that, you don't run a separate pillow, that has a integrated pillow.
It is a separate inflatable pillow that you just tuck into like a little slot in the fitted sheet, okay. Which holds it in place and doesn't slip around as well.
Got a pocket in the,
it
in
does,
the sheet.
Yeah.
Right. The other thing, the second thing I'd think is I got some fingerless ragwool gloves. They've got rubber speckling on the palms, and they were just cheapies off Amazon, I think. I can't remember, something maybe about $10 or $15 for the pair. And I've been really impressed with them in terms of still having dexterity with my fingertips being exposed. And they do get a bit cold, granted, but the rest of my hand is certainly warm enough. And especially today being wet, the wool's held up really well. So they were a surprise package. I heard about them on, I'm going to say probably the Go Hunt podcast. They might have recommended them and searched them out. And yeah, I'm liking them. And probably the third thing for me is I've got some, I used to run a jet boil, and I decided I wanted to change it up a bit. So I wanted to use a different cooker and some pots that I could actually use in a fire. So if you were running low on gas or you wanted to conserve your gas, you could just, you know, light a little fire. Obviously, where permitted, some national parks in Australia, you're not permitted to have fires. So check those regulations before you decide to do this. But so I went out and got some Tokes titanium pots and a Soto Windmaster cooker, and I've been really happy with that setup. It's certainly no heavier than a jet boil. Everything's self-contained. I've used two pots, a larger one and then a smaller. I think it's a 750ml, and the larger one is about 900ml, something like that. They all fit neatly inside each other. It's a nice little package, and it comes with a sort of mesh bag that it all folds up into. So all in all, I'm pretty impressed with that, and certainly gives you the flexibility when you do run out of gas unexpectedly, that you can just stick it up next to a fire and still have a hot cup of chocolate.
Yeah, definitely. Just expanding on that, we had a bit of a run-in just on the recent South Island trip where we were running a MSR Whisperlite, I think it is, or is it kind of like the MSR equivalent of the jet boil. And unfortunately, the brass grommet that attaches to the gas cylinder On the previous trip, we must have actually, it must have come loose, and we've actually thrown that out with the old gas cylinder. So we got up on the hill, and unfortunately we had no hot water for any hot drinks or any of our dehydrated meals for the next few days. So morale was definitely low. So it's amazing how much you rely on that hot water when you're down the backcountry. So it was it was a sad moment when we realised we weren't going to have a hot drink or meal for quite a few days. So definitely double check your gear, your cooker, and make sure it is functional before you do head out into the backcountry, because it's all it takes is, you know, 30 seconds to make sure it's all working, which can be a, you know, save you a lot of grief later.
Well, I mean, look at today, you know, this cold, miserable, wet day today, and we had a cup of hot chocolate up on the hill, and that was an immediate morale boost.
Oh, big time.
And I'll give a shout out here to Dog and Gun. The Hog Chocky hot chocolate is exceptional.
It's bloody good.
It is. It's bloody good. In fact, on the first day at the show at the Deer Expo, they sold out of it. We went there to go and stock up, grab another one, and you, I think you grabbed the last one.
Yeah, I meant to grab some of the last one out off the stall, but it was selling like hotcakes, yeah, so it was gone. Yeah.
And that was before the first day was over. So well done, guys. And then when we got back to camp, cold and wet again, and into a cup of hot soup, and again just warmed you up straight away. Heat yourself up.
It's a game changer, isn't it? Just a little bit of hot soup or hot drink, and life's good again.
Can we talk about one bit of gear that you're perhaps disappointed in or didn't live up to your expectations that you might have brought along with you?
Well, I didn't actually bring it along on this trip, but something I suppose I want to kind of chat about what I've seen from your gear or what I have used previously, which I think would be an excellent upgrade to my gear, is on the South Island trip, I did run a walking stick, or a hiking pole, I guess you'd call it. I bought a relatively cheap one from Kathmandu just to give it a go. I'd seen it on a lot of videos and a lot of guys running them, and I'd always kind of, I don't think that's going to be for me. But actually, after using it for the first day down the south, I was loving it. It was going well. It was loved it actually. I was just running a single one. However, on day two, I was in a bit of monkey scrub, kind of went ass over, 30 kg pack on top of me, and I actually managed to break the walking pole. So it wasn't really any fault of the actual manufacturer. It was more just the situation or the location I ended up falling. But I noticed on your trip, Tobias, that you're running I think it's called a mountain stick.
Mountain stick, yeah.
Mate, what a cool piece of kit.
Yeah, from Mountain Gear NZ. Yep. Matt over in New Zealand makes them all himself, gets everything done. I believe he gets them all done over in, every component done in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Really nice guy. That one that I'm running is the first series that he did. He released
a Mark II kind of
thing. Yeah, Mark II. He made some changes to it. I've been really happy with that, and it's super versatile. Like today, you know, when we were sitting on that clearing, we weren't sitting there. We were walking along, and the fog broke very quickly. Mm. And so we were able to jump down, and I threw my bino straight on top of the mountain stick and was able to use that to steady the binos to try and glass the other side. I've got tripod there with, a good pan head on it. I've got a tricer pan head on it, and the mount on the binos to clamp in from ASIAC equipment. And it works great, but it takes a bit to set up.
Yep.
You know, you've got to get your binos level, your pan head level, and we just didn't have time because it was potentially only going to last for minutes. So that was a great use of that.
And for those listening, the mountain stick's kind of like a bit of a cross between an ice axe and a walking pole almost. It's got a carbon fibre kind of pole, which is adjustable.
Yep.
With kind of more of an ice axe at the top, which you can use as your handle as you walk around. So it was that's one of the things I'll definitely be checking out once we get out of here.
Yeah. And hopefully we're going to get Matt on as a guest on the podcast too, and have a chat about, he does do some other things. He's got some bipods as
okay,
well.
Okay, nice.
And I think he may have some other things up his sleeve too. Yep. So, yeah. But that's definitely something I'd recommend, using it as a walking pole and ice axe and a self-arrestor as well. So haven't had a lot of use for the self-arrestor over here, but certainly in New Zealand when you're traversing a ice slope.
And it's so light as well, so if you're not using it as a bit of a walking pole, you just strap it on your pack, and you never know. Like if I was on our South Island trip, if we had got a good decent dump of snow, the terrain changes pretty drastically. So just having that extra little, that tool there, if you do need it, could be very worthwhile.
Mm. Well, I'm running the Hilleberg ACTO one-man tent, and I'm going to say that I'm a little disappointed in it. One of the issues that I had last night, with the wind picked up to, it was about
40 or 50 k's an hour. Yeah.
And we're in amongst some trees, so we sort of nestled in here to try and get a bit of shelter from the wind. And because of the height of the ends of the tent, my face is actually quite close to the roof. By the time you add the depth of the air mattress and then the depth of the pillow, there's only, a couple of inches, if that, to my face. So last night I was getting whacked in the face by the roof of the tent from the wind. So, little bit disappointed in that, but the tent held up great. There was no issues. I did get up at 3 o'clock and sort of mucked around with the guy lines and tried to adjust them a bit to see if that made a difference. But other than that, the tent's been great. So
it's the last thing you want to be doing, though, isn't it? Getting out of the tent, early in the morning to
I didn't appreciate the 3 a.m. wake up, but.
The other thing, actually, one of the other things I actually forgot on the trip, which is, it's just annoying, is my gaiters for my boots. Probably the first trip I've done without a pair of gaiters in a long, long time, and it's amazing how reliant you are, or you become on them, just, to keep the water out, keep the debris out, and I've actually really battled with that, just not having the gaiters. I usually run Morocco 30 snake-proof ones when I'm here hunting in Australia, and just the Huntech three-quarter ones, I'm not actually sure of the name of those, when I'm back in New Zealand, but no gaiters this trip, and I won't forget them again.
Mm. Yeah, nothing like forgetting something to teach you a lesson about making sure you don't forget them next time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like you you pointed out today when I pulled out a couple more bits of Kuyu gear out of another bag and put on top of my already many layers of Kuyu gear. I was bit by the Kuyu bug years ago, and so I primarily run Kuyu clothing, and I've always been happy with it, and always been happy with the service that we get from Kuyu. But it's I'm not particularly stuck to Kuyu. I'm more than interested in trying other brands and looking at other products people are doing now, but I think for me, the ability to get things shipped over to Australia was a big draw card for Kuyu, and Jason Hairston was I really, really resonated with him and his ethos, and so that sort of was a real encouragement for me to keep going with their gear. I was in the States a couple of years ago and we dropped by Kuyu. We may have gone there a few times actually and spent quite a bit of money, but that's what you do.
But it is good looking gear and it looks like top quality gear as well.
Yeah. Well, mate, as you pointed out, there is actually ice coming off this tarp at the moment, and temperature has dropped significantly, so we might wrap this up for the moment, and we'll kick this off again maybe in a day or two when we get a chance, and hopefully by then we've got a stag or two on the ground. We have seen a few deer. Jason managed to find a young stag, and we found a couple of hinds as well.
Yeah, managed to get the, well, about 100 metres away from a young stag yesterday, which was cool. It's always great when you get onto them and they don't know you're there, and managed to get a little bit of footage of the hind and stag. And we are seeing a few deer around, and I believe tomorrow is forecast for a pretty cold, clear day. So I think after this rain, I think tomorrow morning if we're up early and get onto some of those faces that will get that early morning sun, we might be in with a shot, I reckon.
Mm, yep. If I can drag myself out of bed early enough.
I'll be dragging you out. We'll be up early. Well, I think they're forecasting about -4 to about 4 degrees tomorrow, so it's going to be a real cold one.
Yeah.
But I think those north-facing faces are going to be pretty hot first thing tomorrow, so we'll be up early to us.
Yeah, that's the challenge, isn't it? It's finding that motivation at 5:30 in the morning when it's -4 and potentially snowing outside, but you might as well get yourself out of bed, because otherwise there's no point in being all the way out here if you're not going to get out.
We're not going to shoot deer or a line in the tent, are we?
That's right, yeah. Yep. All right, mate, yeah, thanks again. Appreciate your input today, and we will pick this up again, hopefully,
with a couple of days.
With some success.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, thank you for listening in. If you'd like to contact me for a chat, pass on any feedback, or have some ideas for future podcasts, please reach out to me on Instagram at Australian_hunting_backcountry, or email australian.hunting.backcountry@outlook.com.au. For now though, please look after yourselves and your mates.